welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. Today is July 31st, 2022, and my name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
Well, Bill, what do you have for us today?
Well, Aaron, we have a sponsor, Pape Machinery. Thank you for asking.
Sure, Bill, anytime.
Yeah. Well, Aaron, Pape Machinery is our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. They're located up at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake, and they do everything John Deere. They'll also work on your other brand tractors, but go up and see them.
Those who shall remain nameless.
Those who shall not be mentioned on the air, yes.
I like it.
Uh-huh. And, or you can give them a call at 226-9226 or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com. There you are.
And there you have it. So, I had to fix my microphone. The sounds of a struggle? Yeah, that was me. Yeah. So today, we're going to talk about marijuana again. A little different vantage point today. Imagine how many vantage points I could find for you. I am filled with vantage points. Yeah, most of them, like, kind of firsthand-ish, which is what makes you angry. Oh, first I should say that the documentary that the folks in Siskiyou County worked on with Day of the Color news folks.
Narcofornia.
So not just in case you're from somewhere else, it's not California, it's Narcofornia. And I think you'll learn a lot, actually. There's quite a bit to take a look at. They didn't use all the footage. If you go to wethepeopleradio.us and you click on the pot tab, there is a YouTube link to that 30-minute documentary on there, as well as pictures, most of the pictures I've taken myself. I got to add the ones from a week ago Friday. I did a flyover up there and got some more sad, amazing pictures of the volume.
Yeah, the magnitude of the grows up there is staggering.
Mind-blowing.
Yeah.
So the chemicals and everything that goes with it, and that's coming to a cannabis dispensary. I was going to say a dope store, but they're all dope stores to me. But it's a cannabis dispensary near you. At probably 80% of what they have comes from the black market, and it has to. Because it's a million times cheaper. So, anyway, if you know people in your community that are selling water to them or delivering soil or all of those things, they are in furtherance of a crime, although growing.
I'd be interested to know how many legal commercial grows are out there that are actually making money selling to dispensaries.
And they have zero connection with the black market?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you'd never get that information.
Yeah.
That's the problem. That information is not quantifiable. So people who say they're doing that, well, there's one guy locally. He has two dispensaries and a giant commercial grow, and you know, claims he made $50 million. That's just not possible. I don't think you could sell happiness and make $50 million. Well, you can't buy happiness, so I guess he couldn't sell it. But anyway, it's an issue that you should be kind of getting smart about, because it's being billed as something that doesn't hurt people. It's a great alternative because alcohol is bad, so we've got to smoke pot. Our guest today is Eric Voth, Dr. Eric Voth, by the way, MD. And he's going to decouple for us the wonderful medical side of marijuana that is hyped to everyone, and then the reality. So he is the he's with the International Academy on Science and the Impact of Cannabis, IASIC, and I have the link there. They have just a huge amount of information. We always post on our site the information from our guests, and we leave it all there with the shows. So if you don't have time to listen, if you don't want to send it to people that way, pull the papers that they write, the websites that they offer. There is a lot of information available, and do your own homework. He specialized in internal medicine, pain management, addiction medicine, and drug policy. And so the medical legal expertise is kind of his lane. His position is the counter argument to should marijuana be a medical option. And everybody I was talking to along the way, people you've heard from on this program, on that tab on the website, POT, you'll see all the shows we've done on that topic, too. And so many, many of those guests have said, well, have you interviewed Dr. Voff? I'm like, well, no. So he and I have, we have texted and emailed, and it's been a little bit of a travel, but we've never spoken. So we're happy to have you on, Dr. Voff, and we will go where you take us today.
Well, that's great. You know, this is such a screwed up issue. I mean, I've followed it now literally.
We need to make it, just 1 second. We need to make your voice louder because you are hard to hear.
Let's try that. I was had my phone on speaker. Is that better?
Oh, hey, that's actually really good. You sounded like you were in a tiny little room.
Well, you know, I've been involved, just as a little bit of background, with this whole issue literally for over 40 years now. And my original involvement was actually as a college kid. I smoked a little pot here, and I kept noticing that people had side effects that nobody expected. And then when I got into med school, I started looking for, you know, what I should have done in the first place. What were the real effects of marijuana? And there was just so little out there. And that made me even more concerned that, wait a minute, we got all these millions of people smoking, and we don't even know anything about it. So through the years, I then self-educated on it, and as I began to realize what a heck of a mess we had on our hands, I got deeply involved with several of the organizations and built several organizations to try to bring this to the public, to get it out front of lawmakers and medical experts to really say, we've got a problem. Now, I'll tell you, I'm going to stick mostly to the medical side. I can talk the other side, which is the legalization and all, but the entire focus of the medicalization movement has been to legalize. If you go back, as I way, you know, in the early 90s, late 80s, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws was the real driver at that point for legalization. And they used to have these big conferences that were big, you know, smoke-in, yahoo things. And several of our colleagues would go and either record these conferences or videotape them. And one of the meetings, we are going to use the medical arguments as a way to get the camel's nose, the tent, so that we can legalize. And a big cheer went up in the crowd and all this laughing and carrying on. And they thought, yeah, well, maybe. And as you look back now, every state that has legalized marijuana legalized it for medical uses first. So I'd say they were really pretty successful at what they were doing. And when somebody then tosses millions of dollars into that effort and looks at profiteering, that's where we are today. And what just completely floors me is how regulators, medical experts, FDA, et cetera, have just looked the other way. There's been so much pressure from the marijuana users and from that whole legalization movement that it just makes my head swim to think that they could be so irresponsible and back off so much with legislation and allow this to hit the public.
Well, the other part of it, too, with that, is that the people who are making the decisions, their ideas on marijuana, their information, comes from the 1960s.
And, absolutely.
And so I don't think I know that they don't because I talk to a lot of them. The people that are making decisions in our city councils and our board of supervisors and at the state and federal level, most of them don't use the stuff. And, yeah, they're thinking, well, you know, people use pot recreationally and then, well, they go on and live their lives. And they don't realize we're into a completely different product now.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, one of the big problems is that nobody has really sat on the marijuana, well, let's call it the industry, because that's really what it is, to try to get controls of what might be safe, might be recreational. So if you go back to my So like back in the 70s, 80s, et cetera, the marijuana that was on the street was about maybe 2, 3% THC concentrations. The old ditch weed that we had in cans, my God, you know, that stuff, you could about a pound of it and never feel it. As if you look at the DEA reports of potency, steadily, year after year after year, the THC potency continued to rise. And if you look at what's being pushed across the country now, both in dispensaries and in a lot of the legalization and medicalization legislation, leaf marijuana being allowed to at least 30% THC, but the vapes and the oils are being allowed to reach 70, 80%.
Mm-hmm.
So let me give you an example here. If I wrote a prescription for Marinol, which is THC, it's legal medical THC, it would be typically maybe 5 or 10 milligrams. If you looked at 30% leaf marijuana, you took a gram of that, there would be 300 milligrams in that sample. And if I took the oils or the vapes that are 80% THC, a gram of it would have 800 milligrams of THC. Mm-hmm. So it's no surprise to me that people are getting psychotic, having these psychiatric outbursts. There's clear evidence now of psychotic episodes, violence episodes, suicide, and we've been tracking a lot of these shootings, and a number of them have been serious marijuana users. Not that that's the only thing, but it's certainly the things that has triggered their violent and psychotic behavior.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned that because mainstream media has not made that connection. But you're absolutely right.
Well, if they do, the story comes out and says that he was a marijuana user, but then I think it was New York Times on the Uvalde shooter said that he was a marijuana user, and then within a matter of a day, oop, that connection's gone.
Yeah.
Well, in fact, the Uvalde shooter shot his grandmother because she didn't want to let him use marijuana.
Oh.
You know, the Illinois shooter, the recent Illinois shooter, he was all over social media. And one of his handles was stoner. Now, you know, it's very hard to prove, was that the only thing that affected him? Obviously not. But by the same token, it uncorked psychotic behavior. It uncorked violent behavior. You probably remember the story of Chris Kyle.
Oh, yeah.
Well, same thing. He and his colleague took this kid out that had PTSD, thinking, let's go to the range and go shooting. And what happened? The character took pot the night before. He'd been psychotic episodically, went out with Chris Kyle, and shot the kid and killed him. Now, would he have done that if he were in a straight, sober state of mind? Very unlikely. And those kind of stories are just rife, but, you know, What I am absolutely floored about is the press doesn't get all over that. I mean, they should be having a fit, and they aren't.
Yeah, and the same thing goes for so many other shootings. So many of these folks are regular users of marijuana, whether or not they were high at the time, I couldn't tell you, but regular users they just aren't making that connection.
Well, and the other part of that is the overall psychiatric disorder that, you know, that you see not only violence, but psychosis alone, suicides are way up. And, you know, in states that really do a good job of tracking this kind of thing, overdoses are up. Opiate overdoses. So it's all part and parcel of that same behavior being uncorked.
I don't. And how difficult has it been as a medical provider to get people to figure that out?
Well, Let me say, I maybe have done more difficult things in my life, but I'm not sure what they were. I have been to medical conferences. I've written papers. I've presentations, you know, all over the world. And it's funny because a lot of the doctors say today, oh, it's recreational drug. And I think part of it is, you know, to really understand it and to study it. I mean, it takes a commitment. You got to dig into the studies and really pay attention. I think a lot of docs figure, ah, what the heck, it's just pot. You know, I got too much to do. Well, I would also argue, they look closely at their practices. It's rearing its head in unexpected places, especially like with domestic violence or psychiatric disorders, et cetera. So I think that it is very difficult to get the media to pay attention, and we're now just beginning to see more and more studies showing up in the medical literature. I mean, there's a steady flow now of things coming out, particularly about the psychiatric dysfunction, and I'm glad to see, because it seemed like for years, you know, they thought, this is just those, you know, those crazy anti-pot people. Well, there's a lot of good research coming out now.
Yeah, if only we can get people to figure that out. That's why we like to do shows on this on a pretty regular basis. There's so much information, and so much of it is not being shared. We want to make sure people have multiple platforms to hear from folks like you who don't, you know, I mean, you can't cram this into a 1-minute interview. It just can't be done. We'll be back with our guest, Dr. Eric Voth. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them? When they move into your neighborhood, they take over, but good. They want you all body and soul.
All right, Dr. Voth, we're back.
Dr. Voth, I read somewhere that you know, early studies on marijuana showed it to be not terribly addictive. Is that true with the high grade stuff they're selling today?
Well, you know, those studies came at the issue in a lot of different ways, and you know, their criteria for addiction, et cetera, was a problem. I can tell you, I ran a chemical dependence unit from 1998 to 1994. And about half of the people that we brought in, addiction, which, you know, is a broad term,
sure,
were either addicted specifically to marijuana or to other drugs along with marijuana. But really, there's no question that especially as the pot has gotten stronger and stronger, more are clearly addicted to it. And there's evidence that if you abruptly stop it, you get withdrawal symptoms, you get the obsessional use. So, yeah, it's definitely addictive. It has become probably more so as it's gotten stronger. And you know, that makes me want to tee off a little bit on the issue of the whole medical cannabis, medical marijuana. You know, first of all, always keep in mind that was a charade. It was a charade to gain legalization. It's been extremely effective. You know, what, 37, I think, states have medical marijuana statutes. But here's the thing. They have not built these in a legitimate framework. You know, medicine... So, you know, what I would do on a daily basis, I have standards of care. And if a patient comes in, I interview them. I figure out what their disorder is. Let's just say it's pain. Try to figure out how that happened. You know, so what were the causes? What has made it better? What makes it worse? And then, you know, really go through a diagnostic evaluation, document in the medical records what medications have been used, what interventions have been tried, are there specific doses or concentrations? And then if I pick a medication, I'll say, now look, you know, you're going to take only this amount, and here's a certain number of milligrams, give you only this many tablets, and here are the warnings and precautions. And there is not any of that required nor done with medical marijuana. It's just not. I mean, that's one of the areas that we are all pushing very hard, is the labeling of cannabis products. You know, put on there, oh, may cause psychosis, may cause violence episodes, may impair driving, can cause suicide, et cetera, et cetera. Just think for a moment, as an example, if some state, gosh, let's pick California, you know, these kind of crazy
We've
things.
Made a lot of bad decisions, yes.
Well, let's just say the legislator decided they're going to make oxycodone available by recommendation. It's legal. Anybody that wants it, we don't care where it comes from. We don't care how it's produced, south of the border, north of the border. You can just have oxycodone, and there's no precautions on it, no warnings on it, no dose guidance. It's just, here you go. Go take oxycodone, and God love you. Well, you know, we never do that. You know, people would look at that and go, you're insane. But that's what we've done with pot.
Yeah, and it's...
And so one of the things that I'm pushing hard is to go back to these statutes and say, wait a minute, let's get them into, if you really want it for medicine, let's put it in a medical framework. But that, I mean, they don't want to do that because they know what will happen.
Yeah, so the other choice is you can go to a collective or whatever you want to call them, and the minimum wage kid behind the counter can tell you all about
the great effects. They can diagnose all your illnesses and
yeah,
give you the right.
You can go in and tell him you have cancer or, you know, whatever, and he'll recommend the right pot for you.
Right.
And like you say, there's no... amount that, you know, there's no guidance or professional or licensed folks that are giving them the correct dosage or anything. You just go in and, oh, yeah, try this. You'll love it.
Well, you know, my home state of Kansas, and I've lived here all my life and practiced here, has not had medical marijuana, and they've been fighting hard, you know, to get it passed through. And their most recent legislation has proposed 21 conditions, as well as, quote, any other chronic medical conditions, end quote, for pot. Now, just ridiculous. I mean, there isn't an ounce, a shred of medical evidence that most of these things have any benefit. And even pain, which is one of those that everybody's assumed, you know, oh, God, marijuana for pain. There are only certain types of pain that it's thought to maybe, not absolutely, but maybe help a little bit. So when you really get down to the science of it, you know, the medical marijuana that really just should vanish.
Yeah.
You can just argue over legalization, you know. You want to put stone drivers on the road? Well, okay, I guess so. You know, and really after the legalization piece. Fortunately, you know, California, Colorado, et cetera, have done that. But the medical side is nonsense, and I think that's something that just ought to be shot down across the country.
Do you, I would imagine you have some pointy conversations with some of your medical colleagues over this and have over the years? Because there are doctors,
you know,
who think it's actually good for you.
And what I usually do is I say, okay, I tell you what, I'm going to send you 50 studies. You read these, study them, don't just, you know, toss them in the trash, 50. And then after you've done that, come back to me and let's talk and see if your opinions change. I just literally had a legislator do that. This guy was PO'd because I was taking, you know, an anti-stance and, oh, you know, you're old time and you're out of touch and all this. I said, I tell you what, let me send you four studies, just four. You read them and then get back with me and tell me what you think. And he, you know, crawled back with his tail between his legs. He says, well, people have should have a right to do whatever they want to do. And I said, well, now, wait a minute. I said, is that true of every other part of medicine? You know, it's and so it's like it's very much like don't confuse me with the facts. And I tell you what, I mean, there is so much, so much data about marijuana. That's why I formed Isaac. The group that formed Order Direct realized, well, you know, doctors were just not educated about it as they needed to be. So we actually formed Isaac to get this information in a format out the docs, more aware, and of course the public's picked up on it and really has been excited about the information we've been able to get out to them. So I am, you know, we do this in a highly legitimate, highly professional, careful manner, so not, you know, seen as a, just a bunch of running around with our hair on fire, which we kind of are, but you know, but the point being, you know, we're really trying to get medical science in front of the public.
Yeah, it's mind-boggling that they can take a Schedule I drug and say it's okay for recreational use.
Yeah, what do we have any Schedule I drugs that are for recreational? Oh, well, I guess if you live in Oregon, heroin and a bunch of stuff.
Heroin, yeah, it that's true.
Because what could go wrong with recreational use of heroin? Everybody knows that's good for you.
Well, and the irony is here. You know, the people that did it the right way, you know, there's drug companies that create dronabinol. They did FDA-formulated studies in THC. They carefully, you know, if you got a prescription for dronabinol, which is Marinol's the trade name.
And what do you do with that? What's it for?
There are all sorts of precautions and warnings and all sorts on it that has somehow managed not to make it into the state legislation. And a legal Schedule III prescribable drug. I've prescribed a little bit of it in my professional time, but there again, they went through the right channels, and guess what? You know, it's pretty hard to use that because it's a 10 milligram pill or 5 milligram pill, not, you know, 800 milligrams like with the vapes, etc.
Right. So it begs the question, is there any other Schedule I drug out there that's approved for recreational use?
Well, by definition, if they're in Schedule I, that's, you know, that's they are not considered medication. So,
okay.
You know, there are some that they're working on, like, you know, for instance, psilocybin. And, you know, if you watch this, just pay attention to the psilocybin stuff. You're going to probably hear the same kind of thing, which will be, you know, these old pot smokers saying, oh, wow, so much, I feel so much better when I take a button of psilocybin. Well, you know, my argument is, hey, if it works, take it through the research. Careful. Exactly.
Right.
What milligram dose helps, because I will tell you, psilocybin can also trigger mania, can trigger psychosis. So it's not one of the things you want to just go out there and start popping psilocybin buttons, even though they've been doing it for years. And some people get away with it and some don't.
Yeah, because isn't that a lot more potent than marijuana?
Well, it is in different ways. It stimulates different kinds of chemicals. It's very similar to very, very, very strong depressant, which is also one of the cautionary notes. You know, there are certain antidepressants that will trigger mania and psychotic episodes. So you got to know what you're dealing with, and you got to know what kind of dose you're dealing with.
Right.
And that's fundamental. I have no objection to psilocybin coming through a legitimate medical process that finds the right purity, et cetera. I think, great, if they can come up with something that really helps, you know, critically depressed people, that's terrific.
Mm-hmm.
Having worked with a number of those folks, I will tell you, though, a bunch of them were pot smokers who got so burned out they were more depressed and then ended up using psilocybin to try to blast their way, you know, out of the depression. So it's you know, candidly, it's screwing with brain chemistry by people that shouldn't be messing with the brain chemistry.
Yeah, and that's a lot of this. I mean, let's face it, if you feel like you need to take drugs to solve whatever kind of situation you're having, because a lot of this isn't just, oh, I'm going to use it once and go about my life. That isn't where the problem comes in. It's
right.
It's the recurring use. And, yeah, sure, take a problem that's messing up your life and then throw some chemicals on it.
Yeah. Well, and what you said about dosage, it's very, very difficult to control the dosage on something. Even marijuana, you don't know what the milligrams are before you ingest it or smoke it or however you do it. I would imagine it would be the same with psilocybin. I mean, you basically got a mushroom and you're going to take a bite out of it. You don't know how potent it is. And I don't know how
that's
you would regulate that.
Right. You know, the other piece of the puzzle, and this is something that I really is under my skin, is especially when a lot of the media folks keep talking about, medical marijuana, medical breakthroughs, and these wonderful scientific findings, and et cetera, et cetera. You know, there was a big show on a kid that had this just terrible autism. And illegal marijuana was the only thing that helped. And the mother, you know, hunted around and got in all sorts of trouble and legal trouble. And in the end, it turned out that they were only using about 5 milligram THC marijuana. And that just glazed right through there. Nobody really caught that. It's like, well, wait a minute now. Hold on. You know, you could get that with Marinol. Why didn't somebody recommend that along the way? And anyway, there's just so much behind this that is marketing, you know, trying to push this whole, the whole industry. It's remarkable.
Well, there's just an obscene amount of money in this, right, and especially right now where it's legal, but the regulation is a huge problem because they're utilizing public land to grow it, and that was always a problem because there was federal pushback, but now they're using private property, and so, of course, all the things that we enjoy as benefits of our Constitution, they're using as weapons against us so they can... You know, it's a misdemeanor violation in California to grow more than 6 plants. So if they grow 7 or 7 million, it doesn't matter. It's a misdemeanor.
Well, the one thing that I have been very surprised, not surprised, I've been particularly concerned about, because I'm not a liberal guy, but I do believe in environmental protection, et cetera.
Yeah. Don't we all?
Look at the incredible environmental destruction that's going on in California, Colorado, et cetera, from these grow operations, you know?
Yeah.
My God. Insecticides that nobody even knows the origin of. You know, some god-awful stuff that's from somewhereville in, you know, south something. I mean, it's...
I think you mean somewherevillea in a foreign country. And we banned it, you know, a half a century ago. But... you know, if your agencies are under the thumb of a governor who would have his narrative blown up if illegal... See, because, you know, when you legalize marijuana, the fiction is always that the black market will go away. Well, We all know that, all of us in the real world know that doesn't happen. But if it was to come out that our private property is being destroyed and that the stuff that you're finding in these dispensaries is loaded with banned chemicals, all their magical bus tour goes off the rails. We have to take a really quick break again. Sorry. I kind of forgot. We were having so much fun, and Bill actually looks at a clock periodically, which is so helpful.
Oh, thanks, Aaron.
Yeah, anytime, Bill. So we'll be right back. Our guest is Dr. Eric Voth, and we are discussing the medical side of medical marijuana that isn't just as medical as you might think. You can find us at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
Honey, when my skies are gray, no popping the pills, no smoking the thrills that make me feel okay. You go down easy, baby. I could drink you by the case. You're my painkiller.
I've been told you never slow down, you never grow old. I'm tired of screwing up, I'm tired of going down, I'm tired of myself, I'm tired of this town. Oh my, my, oh hell yes, honey, put on that party dress. Buy me a drink, sing me a song, take me as I come, cause I can't stay long.
Let's dance with Mary Jane, one more time to kill the pain.
All the coded messages we listened to growing up.
Yeah. Tons of them.
Yeah, tons of them. They only become clear when you're a grown up, so they were programming us even back then. Okay, so where to now, Dr. Voth?
Well, you know, I have hoped many, many times there is a way to roll back all this legislation. I think, you know, realistically, we're probably stuck with it. I would hope that the states that have not passed medical marijuana will be able to stand firm. If states pass it, I hope that they get some really tight controls on it, like maximum 10% THC concentrations. Now, that would not be great, but it would be far better than what we've got. Require documentation of side effects, tracking of adverse events. And that's something that is very puzzling to me, because we do not have the level of tracking that we did at one time in our country for, you know, all of these kinds of things, either criminal slash drug or just drug. I think education is hugely important. People have got to realize that this stuff is toxic, and we're unleashing it more and more and more on the public, and we are going to keep seeing the toxic consequences of that. You know, with these young shooters, good example. So we've got to figure out a way to get tighter controls of what's out there. It worries me, candidly. You know, there's a threshold for these kinds of things where you don't get to go back. And I hope we haven't crossed that, but when you look at what's going on out there, I mean, look at some of the cities that are just devastated, like just Denver, for instance, devastated by drug abuse. You know, whole sections of the city, San Francisco is another good example, that are just nothing but drug abuse.
And Portland.
Society cannot exist beyond a certain threshold of lack of productivity and crime. And I don't know where that is. But I would tell you there are cities that are rapidly approaching it, and pot is square in the middle of that mess.
Well, the medical marijuana thing, I think, was the foot in the door. Once they passed that, it was just a matter of time before they said, "Ah, what the heck? Let's go ahead and just make it recreational." That's the one they got to stop. They got to stop that medical marijuana. Otherwise, it will be just a matter of time.
Recreational, I mean, like in California, right? They started with medical, then they moved to recreational. Medical's a fiction.
Yeah,
nobody needs to get any kind of medical.
There's no prescription for marijuana nowadays.
Yeah.
You don't need it.
Well, absolutely. And the problem is now we've got, 37 states that have medical marijuana statutes. And as we've tried to go back and get them to tighten up, you know, they look at you like you got three horns in your head. It's like, well, we can't do that. Well, why not? You know, why can't you put tighter concentration requirements on it, et cetera, et cetera? And so I'm very pessimistic about our ability to shake this off, but if we can get more people to push and say, well, yeah, we don't want it to destroy our state. We don't want to lose our kids to it. We don't want, you know, so many traffic and accidents and overdoses and, you know, psychotic episodes. Maybe legislators will listen, I hope.
Do you think there's a lot of them are still living under the delusion that this is somehow going to put millions and millions of dollars, tax dollars, into their coffers by legalizing it? Because, I mean, it's been proven that just it doesn't happen.
Absolutely, they're living under that. Kansas, right now, that's one of the, you know, they're trying to blow up our skirts. Oh, there's all this money out there. It's like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
You know, when you look at the social costs here, just that alone, you know, it does not pay for itself. I mean, Colorado, for instance, has long said, you know what, it covers maybe like a tiny percentage of their overall budget there. It does not pay for itself. And then you have all the social harms that have to be dealt with.
Well, that's the biggie. I mean, they might bring in a few million dollars into the coffers, but look at what it's really costing in social damage with hospitalization, addiction. I mean, all kinds of bad stuff.
Yep, absolutely. If it were simply addiction, you know, you could go at it perhaps trying to work on lower doses, et cetera, but it's so much more broad than that.
Oh yeah.
You know, if you looked at every episode of either psychosis, violence, suicide, overdoses in California, I would hazard a guess that 90% or more had somewhere in there marijuana was involved. Maybe not as the final cause, but certainly somewhere along the line.
Yeah, it was a contributing factor. There's no doubt about it.
Well, we did a program.
Yeah, we did a show on that.
I think it was on the 5th of June, and listed all the different connections, all the way back to the Oklahoma City bombing.
Yes, right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just like one after the other, after the other, after the other. And you start looking at that, and then you go, well, do we have a mental health crisis in this country? Because that's what this is. You know, I mean, well, we need to get rid of all the guns, and then no one will kill anyone. Well, you can still kill more people with hammers, so I guess we got to get rid of them, too. But then we move to mental health, and we skip the drugs.
I try to be a reasonably centrist person as much as possible, but there are some areas, like, for instance, I've never a gun jump off of a desk and shoot someone.
Exactly.
I've never seen it itself. I've never seen it purchase itself. I've never seen it get in its car and go drive somewhere and then start shooting at people. You know, you got to do something about the shooter.
Yeah. Well, and you have, again, you know, hammers kill people all the time, and yet every construction worker has several, and most of us have several in our garage, which is probably why people use them as a weapon.
It's such a simplistic argument. You know, when you look
silly.
At, like, for instance, Europe, where they have very tight gun control, wasn't it Sweden or one of the Scandinavian islands had 80 people killed by a single person? And nobody had a gun to defend themselves. And, you know, this guy went around and hacked them up and hit them with axes and knives. And, you know, places where people are driving over folks with cars. It's the individual that's the problem.
Killing is killing, and if you're going to kill somebody, you'll find a way to do it. But then when we talk about the mental illness, the thing that frustrates me is then even if you can get through that morass, you move into mental illness, and then it's, well, they're probably being bullied. Well, there's probably this. Well, they're wrong pronouns. Well, they probably wanted to be a girl. We go through that whole thing, and the connection to drug use is completely overlooked. I've never actually heard it discussed.
Well, and that's something that is so absolutely fundamental that they've got to get a grip on is if people are psychotic, maybe they have been pressured or this or that or this or that, but are they smoking pot? And if they're using pot, are they vaping 80%? Holy cow.
Yeah.
That's toxic. It doesn't surprise me if they are. So, you know, I think if somebody would look, and I think they're afraid to look, but I think if somebody would look, I would venture that you could tie marijuana or a form of THC to just darn near every kind of violence, psychosis, et cetera, that's going on in the country. And that's a big, I'm taking a big step there, but I bet you that we could prove that.
I wouldn't doubt that. Difficult. Same, too, with the increase in childhood cancer. Dr. Stuart Rees, there Australia,
right.
He's got a ton of information on the carcinogens, on the damage to the chromosomes. It was funny, I was talking with our engineer before we got started, and I said, you know, I'm one of those people, I try to make my decisions based on facts, so I use the show a lot. Let's bring people on and let's find out what's really going on. The more we have learned about this, I cannot think of anything I would consider a benefit to the entirety of the marijuana. Even the hemp and CBD, to my amazement, causes cancer.
Well, you know, I would urge strongly that folks that are listening, get on our website and study the stuff. Real easy to get to. It's all lowercase. Isaac, IASIC, one, the number one, .org. And we've got study after study after documenting this. We have our medical experts giving presentations on it. there's a lot of data there that needs to get out into the hands of the public. And this is a slick, easy way to do it.
I would like to hear more, maybe when we come back after the break, more about the founding of Isaac and the people that are part of it and kind of what's happening with the coalition of, I know there's a really strong network around the country of people who are pushing back on this, because there are a lot of people out there that are just regular folks living their life. They're not medical people. They don't have any specific expertise. But they would really like to help, and they'd really like to keep this out of their communities. And I hear this a lot. You know, the city council wants to put in a marijuana dispensary, and we don't know what to say. I'd love to get your thoughts and maybe some suggestions on how they can do that and where you've seen that be successful and, you know, where you've seen it sort of, you know, implode too.
Sure.
And maybe a little bit more about your medical practice and what you've seen from your patients, because I think that's like good firsthand info. So let's see. All right, we're doing this new form of communication with Liam behind the two panes of glass that I can't see very well. I think we have to take our break. Oh, here we go now. Sorry. Our clocks are always different. All right. Our guest is Dr. Eric Voth. And you've got that little peek in the window there of We the People Radio. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
What a drag it is getting old. Kids are different today. I hear every mother say, mother needs something today to calm her down. And though she's not really ill, there's a